This is Publishing Talks, a podcast about the book industry. I'm David Wilk, your host, and today I'm talking to Kathy Mice, who is one of the founders of Bublish, BUBLISH.com, a social discovery platform for books and writers. How are you, Kathy?
I'm very well. How are you today?
I'm good. So tell me, I guess let's just start from the beginning, because we'll assume that almost nobody listening will have heard of Bublish yet. I mean, I'm sure you've made some inroads there, but at this point, I think you're looking for an audience. So maybe you could talk about what prompted you to start Bublish.
Well, both myself and Charles Weick Smith, who also founded Bublish with me and designed the user interface, are writers. So we think a lot from that perspective, and we understand what authors are facing as we transition to this new online world where they're kind of, you know, have the burden of promotion. Even if they're traditionally published, they're still holding more of that on their shoulders these days. So they got to write books, and we know how long that takes. I was also an editor, so we know how painful it is to actually create a work of literature. And we wanted to find a solution to help them do a couple of things. One, to promote their work effectively, because there's this great opportunity in social, but it's kind of like talking to the entire world. And first of all, how do you start that conversation? If you're a writer and you don't want to say, hey, read my book, it's awkward. So we wanted to give them a tool to start to show the world their work and tell their story behind what it took to create it. And out of that thinking came Bublish. And so it's a very simple way for them to sample their work through excerpts and then enrich that excerpt with the story behind it. So digital books can be now broken into 1,000 tiny little pieces, and Bublish allows them to do that in seconds. So technologically, they don't have to build a new website or take time to learn something really involved. It's a technology designed by writers for writers to make it simple and to keep it focused on the storytelling.
So how does, well, and maybe I assume a publisher could use it as well if the publisher was working, if the author chose to allow the publisher to do that. But I guess my question would be, let's say I've done this excerpt and I've then, well, in order to do that, do I have to, when you say on your website, it says add your ebook. So I have to upload the file of my book. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes.
And in what, is there a format requirement, or can it be in Word or InDesign? I mean, what do I upload?
An EPUB format. And the reason that we use EPUB is because it is, again, these book bubbles that have a really elegant design, kind of meant to mimic all the elements of the physical book. So when the reader engages, it's very much like that reader meets book experience in a bookstore, and they can look at the bio and synopsis. They can visit the author's website. They can even buy the book right from the bubble. They can look at the author insight. They can scroll through the excerpt. But to generate this and this layout literally takes as long as it does to tweet. It's just,
got it. Because you're using EPUB, you've already got the built-in formatting.
Exactly. It draws from the metadata. It pulls the book cover out. It knows where to extract the title, and then the author's profile and the book upload, that's where they load the bio and their photo and the synopsis. But they do it once, and then they can publish away.
Got it. So I'm trying to, make sure I understand it, but also as a way of kind of communicating about it. Because you've I think one of the things you did by creating a new concept, which is the bubble, it does require one, to think about it a little bit to understand what you mean. This becomes essentially a mobile, almost like a widget might be for a book, because you've got all that metadata and you've got a snippet of the book that then can be placed in by the author or placed by readers. I mean, who actually then has control over that, the bubble and where it can go? Because you've said that it's a way of sharing. I assume we're then gonna, let's say, share it with our whomever, either on Facebook or Twitter or wherever we are. How does that work?
Well, when the author is the only one who has access to their book, and it's, behind a password, and when they create a bubble, then they publish it by sharing it to Facebook, Twitter, or email, and we'll be growing those sites where they can share them. And at the same time, automatically, that bubble becomes part of the publish book bubble stream. So when readers come to our site directly, all of the book bubbles are sitting there in a big stream, and we are currently putting the reader dashboard in so that they can filter by the genres that they like and keywords that they like. And I'd love to come back to this topic a little later because there's an intelligence on the back end that I want to talk about a little bit. But as for sharing, so once a book bubble has been published by the author, it's now perhaps on Twitter or Facebook and in the book stream on Bublish. And then when readers encounter it, they have the ability to reshare it either to a different social site. And these are pieces of highly shareable content. They're designed to be passed around. But readers will also be able to save them. So say you're on Twitter and Bublish allows you to look at three different book bubbles in social space. So perhaps one of our authors tweeted out a book bubble, and then I, as the reader, encounter it, and then I can see three book bubbles, and then Bublish says to me, "Would you like to have a free reader account?" And if I sign up, then I can see more book bubbles by this particular author, and I can also do a whole bunch of things in the future that we plan for the environment here in the ecosystem. And that would be a way for us to start to learn. Excuse me, I'm working out of my home today. That will be a way for us to really see actionable data. So say I'm a reader and I'm saving book bubbles, I'm visiting the author's website, we'll have a really great set of metrics, not based on just likes, but on actual action taken on the bubble. So shares or saves or purchases or further exploration. And that's our plan, is to provide a lot of metrics to the authors based on the action taken upon the book bubbles.
Got it. So, but from now, let's say I'm a publisher. Are you going to allow publishers to do this in behalf of their authors?
Yes, and we are currently, we launched with our free author module, and what we want to do is take it to the next level. We've had, basically on the first day, we had three inquiries right away from publishers saying, especially small publishers who'd like to manage a number of authors from, one place. So we were able to start conversations basically from the day we launched, and we're currently talking with dozens of publishers about this concept of creating a dashboard. And we really want them to be part of the process because it's interesting to learn about, workflows when you're talking about creating really a new piece of content around the book. So it's an enriched excerpt. So there's also an admin side to that. So we're currently talking with a bunch of publishers about that, and the interest has been very, very high.
Well, yeah, I think I've long thought that the sharing of excerpts online is the perhaps the stand-in or the equivalent to browsing in a bookstore. And people have talked about this a lot, that there isn't a good way of replicating the bookstore experience. And I think the answer may be that you don't want to replicate the bookstore experience. in some clunky way, but come up with, as you have done here, with alternative ways of letting people find out about books. The beauty of browsing is that you can walk into a store and discover things by accident that you would never have known about. And now, of course, these are guided accidents in some ways because what goes into the store is based on a set of choices by a lot of people in the chain of supply. But there is no equivalent to doing that that we know of anyway.
I agree with you in that, the algorithm is this attempt to recreate it, but what I call, and I've written a lot about this concept of strategic serendipity that occurs in a bookstore. So there's an organization, and there's also this sense that, if you do find something, you can buy it right there, you can take action right there in the store. But there's an organization to it. There's when you walk in a bookstore, everything, every piece of content there has been vetted several times by different groups of people along the way, from, the point of the author creating it all the way through the publishing process and the distribution process. And now, you're in this amazing world of content abundance online, which is wonderful in theory, except when you're trying to find something. So how do you not destroy the serendipity, but you recreate this kind of context and curation that allows you to find new authors and stumble upon new things, but not look at 5 million books in order to find the one that you want.
Right. Well, and in fact, we know from, from studies that too many choices make people not choose anything. Or what may be happening online is that they choose the same thing that everybody else does to a greater extent than they did when there were we're in a browsing in a browsing environment where you are kind of free to find the serendipity, the strategic discovery. And we're in online the online world, there's just so much information and so much to choose from. What it has actually tended to is make larger institutions even more powerful, because
Exactly.
fewer there people go to the same place that everybody else does, where they buy the same book that everybody else does, and it's the multiplication value of the network, which we all know about now, kind of causes instantaneous mass behavior in a way that really I don't think people have fully understood and also haven't seen before.
No, you're exactly right. You're exactly right.
So what you're looking to do, and of course the challenge for you, I think, you probably know this better than I do. The challenge whenever you're creating something new is to get enough people on both ends to use it. It's the sort of, for you have a network effect as well. You need content in order to get readers to find it interesting. But of course, to get content, you've got to show readers. Fortunately, there's so much content and so many writers and publishers desperate to have their books found. I think that what you will benefit from is that almost, I wouldn't say they'll try anything, but they'll try things that look like they have a chance of finding some new readers.
And I will tell you, I have not. I think because we approached this so much around the problem, we didn't just say, let's just make something pretty. I really began studying the writer's problem, and the publishing industry's changes and the problems there, 2 years ago, and just immersed myself in what was going on. And I think because we are solving a problem, and one of the problems is what you're saying is that the newer voices are getting pushed out. I used to write about economics at Forbes, and I'm always fascinated with, the macroeconomic picture. And what you really see here is just there's no room for risk in this marketplace right now. So, and the less risk that is taken, like you say, it empowers the most powerful. And it also leads to, I think, decisions where things are guaranteed from the point of the publishers. More, you know, we need more guaranteed big sales. So that doesn't always foster a literary environment or an artistic environment that is open to new great works of art. So the key for us was to find a way to give these new voices social proof. And one great way to do that is to put the writing center stage. I mean, you're not going to sell your books no matter what if you don't write great content. And I think, you know, we have to have systems for writers to, for readers to find the great content, but to allow, you know, someone to just throw their work up there, tell their story, and throw it all over the place, and then draw readers towards their story and their work. So it takes time for people to even pay the $2.99 or the $1.99. But it's never been my belief that giving your book away for free is ultimately a sustainable way for you to be discovered. And with, you know, fewer houses taking on the new voices, you just have an environment where, you know, if somebody doesn't provide an answer, it's just the future doesn't look so great. So that was why the sampling became very important to us. So because people will take the time to read a short piece of your content. And if they like it, they'll go deeper. You just have to make it really efficient to produce that for the writer and really efficient for the reader to sample it and say, yeah, that's not my cup of tea. And the other thing on the back end, and this is the strategy part of our strategic serendipity, is we capture with every book not only the genre, but then we ask the writer to input keywords or tags. When the reader comes on, we ask the reader to tell us their top three genres and then put in keywords that are topic-oriented. And as we evolve as a platform, our goal is to really provide a rich discovery experience that is curated by that social metadata. That is, instead of being generated by computers, it is generated by both the author and the readers, and then they can learn from each other. I mean, there's 1,000 reasons why people pick up books that don't have to do with genre. Genre does lead us to, you know, that bookcase in the bookstore, you know, that defines kind of the area. But then what you find within there might be because it's a place you visited, or, you know, I was having a conversation the other day with a publisher talking about stories about food and, you know, how powerful they are. So you could find a book because of meals you cooked, or you could find a book of based on someplace you're going to travel. And as we learn and the community learns to provide more and more information, the discovery experience will be also about that. So we'll give you voices you haven't heard, but it'll be on topics and genres you're interested in. So we'll be able to narrow your search a bit, but not, you know, just wring out the serendipity. We still will preserve the serendipity of it all.
No, I think first of all, it's probably true that there is no one way for people to find books. You know, some people really like to wander through a bookstore and just see what jumps out at them. And other people they just want to go in and find a book and get out of there.
Right.
So I think that, you know, that probably applies to online shopping too. One thing I want to ask you about that I think is really important and that you just sort of touched on, and that is the keywording, which raises this whole interesting point, I think, about what I would call what everybody calls metadata. But what I think is a really big issue is thinking about metadata is sort of like thinking about search engine optimization and search engine marketing at the same time.
Sure.
I think for a lot of writers and also for publishers, I don't think that there is a clear understanding of what the metadata means to them. I don't think that they're, and I don't think, again, I think this is probably because it's emerging as a concept, and it's one that has not been internalized yet. But I wanted to ask you about, does that, have you thought about whether that you might need to give tools or guidance to writers when you ask them for keywords, that you want to encourage them to use, I would say, keywords that sell rather than just keywords that represent. And it doesn't mean to trick people by using, I mean, some people do this, when you see a classified ad and they're trying to sell a Chevy, what they'll do is they'll put in Ford, Jaguar, they'll put in tons of keywords to fool the search engine into finding them even when they're trying to sell something that you're not looking for. Because they know that if you stumble on them, even though you might be looking for a Ford, you find a Chevy, but it might attract your attention, so you might buy it. The same thing could happen with book metadata, and that is, somebody would say, well, I'm going to put in all the keywords that I can think of that anybody might be interested in to find this book, even though the book isn't about any of those things.
Yes, and I, you know, will first of all, I will say I've just been impressed with how savvy many of these authors, even the self-published authors, are about putting in the keywords and even using, you know, the hashtags when they share their book bubbles to, you know, make sure that certain people can see this in historical romance or whatever genre they're in. And we've tried to demystify that by, you know, just calling it keywords, kind of suggesting it's very much like the tags that you put in with a blog post. There probably will be people who will try to game this. You know, so far it has not been an issue, but I'm sure as we grow as a community, you know, I don't know how much it will ultimately help them in their search. But one thing that we are initiating this month is taking that author-generated metadata and attaching it to the book bubbles. So it should really help them with search because search is increasingly social. So, you know, think about producing, you know, 20 book bubbles, and each of them is embedded with this information, and then it's shared socially. It's a fresh piece of social content, and because those social cues are more highly valued by search engines than they used to be, they help you rise to the top, just like a blog post does or anything else. So we think a lot about demystifying metadata because it is a marketing tool. I'm really encouraged. It seems that a lot of people understand the concept of keywords and tagging your content. I think it's because so many authors blog that they do get that. The idea for the reader is a little bit different, but we kind of think of that for them, just give us topics of interest. So again, you know, we don't use the word metadata. We just start to talk about it as a topic that interests you. And those can change over time. And one of our goals is to really make it possible over time for the readers and the writers to learn about that concept of book discovery on a more granular level. And part of that can be done at conversations that we, you know, lead off based on examples that we find as we, you know, employ more search in the site and the site gets bigger. But I think the key is just to remember that they are, again, just ways to connect content with readers. And that's what we're attempting to do. But it is powerful. You know, metadata is a very, very powerful marketing tool when it is done correctly. And in this digital environment, I mean, you can attach metadata in a book bubble now to two paragraphs of your book and start to, I mean, if you think about it, And we get off on these conversations about where you can take this, but how granular is that in terms of, discovery? On the front end, you're just reading this great story, but on the back end, we're able to say, okay, this tiny piece of content floating around is associated with all of this on the back end. And mapping that out. And the other thing that I think is really interesting to think about is, you're reading imprint as a reader. So, you start out in life reading certain types of fiction and books. And I remember I went off to college and I wanted to read everything that the nuns told me I couldn't read in high school. And then, you get your first job and your reading imprint changes. You get a little more mature, your fiction, you're reading different pieces of fiction. You get married, have a family, your reading imprint changes again. So this metadata that the readers are putting in becomes a way for us to learn about their ever-changing reader imprint. And we think because of this endless tale that is this fabulous opportunity really for writers to have, to continue to sell and have their work be relevant throughout time. That's a fascinating concept that we talk about here.
Now, what about the conversation in the other direction? You have writers are talking to potential readers and mm-hmm. kind of designing a way of them finding out about each other. But what about on the other side? So let's say I'm a reader on your site and I have signed up, but I haven't really fooled around with it yet. But how much can I communicate with other readers? Can I communicate directly with writers? Or am I mainly just using it as a reader, as a kind of search tool and sampling tool?
Well, right now it is more of a sampling tool, but definitely social. I mean, we really call ourselves a social commerce and social storytelling site. And the goal here is, again, that because we'll be able to provide actionable metrics over time to authors, that they can start to have events on Bublish that are geared toward people who have taken action based on their content, and maybe as a way of thanking them, they might want to have a reading, and they could send invites to those who have regularly shared and interacted with their content, bought their books. But we see it definitely as a site to nurture that is social, and nurtures a long-term relationship between the reader and the writer, because that's really the future of the whole industry, I think. I mean, I don't think, especially with the price pressure on authors, they're being asked to write more books more quickly. And the key is that, you want to be able to go to this audience that loves your work, supports you, and they'll help you with your career, and you'll help them by providing them with great entertainment through your writing. So as long as, we do think the relationship should be based around the content and the book, and not just, what did the author have for breakfast, which is kind of what happens on Twitter sometimes.
Well, that's true. But, sometimes that's a nice distraction that
it is
people
true.
Enjoy. Let me ask again, this sort of, does this lead to the possibility of writers and readers talking to each other so that you have writers finally able to, have a mechanism for communicating with readers, which, for today, it's more true now. Of course, the web opens that up, but still, people buy books from retailers. They don't buy books from authors, and the communication is essentially mediated by the retailer. We go on Author Central for Amazon, or you might, use the you might use the product page as a way of communicating about your book. But if you're a writer or a publisher, you never know who bought the book. You don't really know, other than how, some of the comments work. on your book from consumers, you really don't have a direct communication with people. So what you're creating, in a sense, is a conversation stream between writers and readers. Now, I know Goodreads does that too, to a certain extent, and that might be, a different model, but they've got, I think, 9 million people now. So it shows that there is a pretty strong interest in the reader world in talking about books or communicating with readers and or communicating with writers. It does seem like a rich territory. But of course, Goodreads has now hooked up pretty closely with Facebook because that's where so many people are. Is that sort of leading, I mean, is that something that's in your future as well, that you'll be tightly integrated with Facebook as a part? I mean, I know right now you can share on Facebook the bubble, but maybe there are ways that you can be more tightly integrated into this conversational model.
Yeah, and I will just, yes, definitely the conversation, and definitely social. I just believe very strongly that commerce in general is becoming more social. Search in general is becoming more social. Marketing is becoming more social. And, what better marketplace than books for this concept of social storytelling? But we model ourselves a bit. We do more curation, but there's a site called fab.com that has been wildly popular in a completely different marketplace. But that is a social commerce model where, things that you find, you can share, they bounce back and forth between email and between the site. And social is just in the DNA of this shopping experience. Now, with regard to something like Facebook, we want to integrate as broadly as possible. We want to be platform agnostic for several reasons. You never know where your readers are until you start to get the metrics. I mean, maybe your readers are Google Plus people or Twitter people or, everybody has their different sites, and there are a lot of them, and there are always new ones emerging. And I think it is a mistake for anyone to become completely aligned too closely with a single social network. So our philosophy has always been, that you can scatter these bubbles everywhere, and where they find that, fertile ground, to mix my metaphors there. Then, you can start to say, okay, well, my readers seem to be in this place at a certain time, and I'll engage with them there. But should the terms of service, which we've seen happen, or the rise of a new social platform occur, we can basically give access right away to the reader, to the writers, to that new venue, and let them experiment and learn if that's an effective place for them to, share their book bubbles, hang out. Because again, another big difference is that we're really careful that we don't want to create a walled garden for Bublish. It is, again, based on highly shareable content. Things go out, and then people come back, and they go out. So there's all different ways to experience book bubbles, and that too is built very much into our DNA. Don't be a walled garden, because we think the opportunity for the author is to constantly be experimenting. I mean, this is a market, a social marketplace that changes all the time. I mean, look at the rise of Pinterest and how useful that became very quickly to the publishing community as a way. And it's one of the things we look to because it was so visual. It basically kind of redefined social through this, that, and Instagram through these, visual prisms. And it was one of the reasons book bubbles were very, very visually elegant, was to show, the web now is a place that's cleaning itself up, as it were. It's becoming less cluttered. People are tired of the white noise and the busy and the And for books, it hasn't been a great place because it's very hard for the brain to just focus in on the content. So we wanted to show we're very much aware of that move toward the visual. But again, it was just another example of why you need to be agile. You need to produce a platform that can react very quickly to the changes in the social environment.
So I guess the $64,000 question is, what's your business model? How do you make money?
Well, we're starting with affiliate links. So we will have an affiliate cut. We're just instigating that or initiating that right now. So we would get a little affiliate from the free model. And then the dashboard for the publishers will be a paid model. There will also be an author premium account introduced. And we really do see moving into a multimedia type of, that Bubbles could become multimedia and sell different types of content. And I think the convergence there that you're seeing because of very much because of the devices that are available that make multimedia, a lot of the publishing houses are really looking at this model. You see journalism moving into ebooks as a way to monetize that type of really intense investigative journalism that's hard to monetize as a magazine or a news article. So now you monetize it again as an ebook. So we see amazing convergence, and we would like to become a social marketplace and ultimately sell books through social commerce.
Well, it seems, it's hard to tell, you know, so who knows what will happen. But I think it's, you know, I've seen a lot of ideas that just didn't resonate as, you know, plausible mechanisms. But I think what you've created does look like it has some resonance and a chance to attach in a meaningful way, which is hard to do. So
well, thank you.
I hope that you're successful. I mean, we need what you're offering. So I think that does tend to indicate that you have a good chance. I hope that's
thank
true.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much. Yeah, so far the response has been really unbelievable. We're thrilled with our first month, which is tomorrow. We celebrate our first month, and you know, we have 200 authors and writers readers already signed up. We've had over 14,000 page views. Our top bubbles are getting views in the close to 1,000 now, and so yeah, we've put a lot of our lives into this theory that people really love the storytelling, and we hope that it takes off. But we really are very pleased with the reaction, and we feel it's because we are solving a lot of issues here. So for both readers and writers, and that's the key, because if you solve problems for readers, you solve problems for writers.
I think that's actually correct
at the same time.
Well thank you so much for talking to me, Kathy. This has been David Wilk for Publishing Talks. I've been talking to Kathy Meiss from Bublish, BUBLISH.com.